You're listening
to Welcome to Comics, episode number 289. This week, we talk about Unbeatable Squirrel Girl, Squirrel Power. Visit WelcomeToComics.com. Hear past episodes. See what we're reading next. Or send us feedback. This show is supported by listeners like you. Access bonus episodes by becoming a patron today at patreon.com/WelcomeToComics. And now, the cast begins.
My daughter has been addicted to the song Despicable Me. So it was like, I'm having a bad, bad day. If you take it personal, that's okay. She runs around yelling, bad day, bad day. It's kind of cute, but it's also annoying as fuck. Because I know she just wants to listen to it on repeat. Mm-hmm. And that song needs to stop. I mean, at least it's a good song. At least it's not like some crappy like kid song. But damn, bad day, bad day. Anyway, you guys ready to talk about this week's comic before it gets too late?
Sure.
This week we read Unbeatable Squirrel Girl, Squirrel Power by Ryan North. This collected the first four issues of the first run from 2015. So in 2015, I think they started this as like an 8-issue mini, but it got so popular that they decided to turn it into a serial ongoing, but then they did another number one also in 2015. So there's two number ones in 2015 up Unbeatable Squirrel Girl. We read the first one and the three after that.
They continue, like the second number one continues the story from the previous stuff.
Yeah, the original mini was 8, and then it's an ongoing after that, which is
right. So if you want to buy the trades, volume one is issues 1-4. Volume 2 is issues 5-8. And then volume 3 is issues 1-5. 1-5,
yes. So to be clear, in case you're listening to this and you aren't sure which one you read, we read the one with Galactus and Whiplash and Kraven and not the one with Doctor Doom. I started reading the one with Doctor Doom, and I'm going to go back and read issue 5 because I like that one too. But I was getting really annoyed at all the references to that other number one that I was supposed to have read.
Yeah, that's why I stopped and was like, wait a minute, am I doing this wrong?
Yeah, and that's when I conferred with you, David.
Yeah.
That said, I want to start this discussion by saying I ended up liking this comic quite a bit, but after the end of the first issue, I was really, really tired of it.
Thank you.
And I think it's because I have fatigue for this trend in comics and this kind of character, because I don't know when it started, but notable ones in my mind are this one was really popular, Batgirl of Burnside, and Patsy Walker, a.k.a. Hellcat. It's all this, like, single young woman, maybe college kid, you know, moving to the trendy, hipstery part of town and moving in with a new roommate who's good at computers. Like, it's in all of them. It's literally all of these three are the exact same.
Yeah.
I know that there are more out there, too, that are this exact same formula, which I should be happy because I like fun, light comics. And this is what I always wanted. I hate the grimdark stuff. And I don't hate it. It has its place. But this is the kind of comics I enjoy reading. But it's like the formula is just too similar. And this came out in 2015, so like I said, I don't want to pile all of this onto this comic because that's something I'm bringing to this reading. But man, after the first issue, I was like, oh god, another one of these.
That's actually kind of funny because I felt very much the same way. And I really did enjoy that first issue. I liked the Kraven the Hunter bit because I was like, this feels fresh. Like, it felt very different to me. But then the next three issues felt just like the first issue. And I think it got really old very, very quickly for me. I will give the caveat that, so Ryan North is like one of the pioneers of webcomics. I have a huge amount of respect for him, but I hate his writing so much. I hated Dinosaur Comics, and...
Oh, that's who this is?
Man, like... Yeah, this is Dinosaur Comics guy.
Okay.
He's, like, really good at what he does, but it is just not my cup of tea. Mm-hmm. And my main thing with this whole thing, like, this whole trade, is I loved the overarching plot points. I love, like, just the way it progresses in the story itself, and even what happens within, like, how she convinces Galactus to not eat Earth because she knows that he's actually, like, a cool, sensitive dude inside, or how she convinces Kraven to go hunt Gigantos in the bottom of the sea, or like, the squirrel suit. Like, I think those are great, and they're funny, but the, like, actual line text, the dialogue bubbles, make me want to pluck my eyes out. So, okay. I mean, like, this is just a personal thing. Ryan North's sense of humor is just the opposite of my cup of tea, but otherwise, yeah. But that was, like you said, Andy, I think a huge problem is she does everything in the same way each time. She's like, cool girl, roommate, fairly non-confrontational, solving things with cleverness instead of superhero powers, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's slightly disappointing for me because Volume 3 of this series, which I started out reading, I think is more complex. Obviously because the characters have had two more traits to develop and they have richer interactions. But I think I was let down because I came to this from that. And I was like, oh, this is kind of a lot slower. But what I like that I didn't pick up in the other one, by the time you get to Galactus and you read the lines on the bottom, it's pretty well established that the point of view we're getting is from an unreliable narrator, which... I love literature that uses an unreliable narrator because you read it and you get that omnipotent kind of voice almost, but you kind of have to question everything and you look at it all through the lens of the person that's doing the narration. And so I get the feeling that this is like almost as drawn and written by Squirrel Girl. It's a really unique thing. I don't see that much in comics because Galactus never talks like this. this is like if Squirrel Girl told us what her conversation with Galactus was like. That saying, I can see this interaction happening, just the actual dialogue I don't think is authentic to what really happened in that interaction. So it's, I really appreciate that, like, you never get this kind of thing with a comic, an unreliable narrator. I think the only other one that we've read that was like that was Mind Management by Matt Kind. Dark Horse went way back in the day. But that was a mind-bendy kind of thing. It wasn't, like, light and fun like this. So that's what got me in, was that Galactus, the dialogue interaction between them, when Galactus is like, you're pretty cool, Tippy. I was like, that's not what he's going to do. That's bullshit. But fine. Sure, Doreen, sure.
Yeah, it's funny because she basically takes the Hercules approach, too, except this time it's in that very, like, modern millennial sense instead. Instead of, like, have a beer, bro.
Yeah. What did you think of this thing, David?
Yeah, the whole Galactus interaction made me think of the Bob Layton Hercules one we read many, many years ago. You know, like, I thought the comic is fun, and I can see the appeal from it. The appeal for it, because, you know, it's funny and it's quirky, and I think it can it hits a wide audience. Like, I think kids, younger people, maybe not kids, but like early teens and stuff, could really really enjoy this one. But then older people could too, because there's like some funny, you know, jokes, make fun of millennials and stuff, and the art's kind of fun. But coming at it from like a literature perspective, I don't know if this comic has anything to say, really. And I think the problem with that is that we, you know, it's hard to to separate, you know, it's hard not to compare things, right? And so to a certain degree, you know, even if you try not to do it actively, at least for me, I saw, you know, there's a point where I do compare it to the other things I read, because they're all in the same, they're all in the same medium, and they're kind of for the same audience, like the general, you know, the general comic reading audience. And you know, there's not every comic needs to be literature or strive to be mm-hmm. literature. But, you know, when we read the best ofs, a lot of the times they have something poignant to say, or something, or some commentary on social issues or something like that. But they work it into a story that's, you know, that lends itself to comics. Or even like it kind of can be like show, you know, some aspect of life.
Mm-hmm.
I think all literature does that. You can relate, like the best literature, readers can relate to it no matter when they're reading it or where they're coming from when they read it. Mm-hmm. They can take something away from it. And I think as a 30-year-old man, it's hard for me to relate to a person that's just entering college. I was a person that was just entering college, but that was like 15 years ago.
Yeah, that was literally half your life ago at this point.
Yeah. But like I said, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to say something comic. Things can be entertainment for the sake of entertainment.
Yes.
You know, there's lots of movies that I enjoy that are critically bad movies, but not everything has to be, you know, an Oscar contender.
Yeah,
right.
Some things can be Pacific Rim.
Yeah,
yeah.
I love Pacific Rim.
Yeah, and I think I should say, you mentioned the best stuff that we're doing. This is our, turns out it was a good series. I didn't mention that up top. This is all the stuff that we passed up over the previous years, that we wanted to put in the best of, but for some reason didn't make the cut and we never got around to reading them. So now we're coming back to them. But you mentioned audience, and I think it's funny because Amazon says that this is for the grade 5 to 8 audience, which I think jives because it's not especially violent. And even when she defeats people, it's with squirrels, which is funny. So it's really diffused violence for the most part overall. And even when she like goes all out punching and kicking Galactus, it's comedic effect. Which is totally in contrast to Batgirl of Burnside, which has a similar setup and vibe, but that has like her friend getting kidnapped and she has to fight a virus version of herself that's threatening to kill innocent people. So that is markedly different in tone. And I think that's more for like the high school audience. And similarly, Patsy Walker Hellcat, it talks about like law and the setup of all that kind of stuff. So that's a markedly different audience too. So this definitely is trying to skew younger. I think it succeeds in bringing that pre-college tone to a younger audience in a way that's more approachable. So it's definitely good for that. It's just tough. It's like when we were talking about Moon Girl. Like, Moon Girl's hella good, but yeah, what... It's great for the audience.
Yeah, it's kind of weird because I'm thinking about this relatability factor, and that is a big thing because I'm actually scrolling through our old episodes looking at what we read, and I feel like sometimes, you know, we read stuff that is just pure entertainment that isn't really relatable, and yet we really enjoy it. Like Archie versus Predator.
Fuck yeah.
There's like no really
good. Okay, no, Archie Predator. No, Archie versus Predator had a really good feminist undercurrent in the last, overcurrent in the last like half an issue.
That did happen. But I mean, it's not like I'm not going to find myself in a small town or like a beach town fighting Predator. Like, and I'm not going to experience anything remotely close to that in the entirety of my lifetime. I think, I hope. Gene Yang's new Superman, there's like a little more there because he's like looking for his mom and stuff, but it's just kind of goofy, right? Like, but I think this is the thing. Like, we read things that are just, like, pure entertainment. And I feel like they have just this little something. Like, it's not even relatability. It's, like, it's kind of weird because you mentioned Moon Girl, too. Like, for this and Moon Girl, I look at them and I'm like, I can see objectively that this is, like, high quality. It's well written. It's well drawn. It's good. But there's not that little something that just, like, connects with me and makes me think, like, I want to reread this one day. I want to suggest this to someone else. I want to continue reading this. Like, this one just doesn't have it, whereas some of the others that are just, like, pure goofiness or even, like, not even relatable have that little, like, spark of something. And I don't know what it is, like, what makes a comic fall into that category. So it's kind of weird.
Yeah, it's tough. And I don't envy any author or publisher who wants to make a younger audience pointed comic because people like us are going to hear that it's well received and pick it up and go to it trying to find something more than I think is intended to be there. Which isn't to say we're going about this the wrong way. I mean, this is what we're here to do, right? Like, read this and take a look at it and see if there's more to pick at. But that said, I really liked Moon Girl, and I there was a lot of subtext to talk about in there. But at the same time, the big problem with Moon Girl and the Devil Dinosaur is that there was a lot of in-universe references that you had to know. You had to be a certain level of familiar with the Marvel Universe to approach that book. Like, the whole thing with the Inhumans and the Terrigen Mist, that'd be unapproachable for somebody like my niece who's not into comics. I feel like if my niece were going to say, hey, Uncle Andy, tell me, I'm willing to try. I'm willing to try a comic. Give me a comic. I'd be much, much more quick to grab this because you don't need background. Squirrel powers, understood. You know? And it's much cuter and much more approachable than, like, a spider. And whenever she does face the villain, the note cards are a funny thing in the story, but they serve a really good function. And I think Ryan North also does a good job of choosing people who have very simple, clear, straightforward motives. Craven the Hunter hunts stuff, mostly Spider-Man, but hunts stuff. Whiplash hates Iron Man, and he'll do whatever, rationalize whatever he's doing, so long as it hurts Iron Man. He doesn't give a fuck. Like, it's easy to understand and approach that character. And Galactus, devourer of worlds, he wants to eat planets, he wants to eat Earth. Easy. Like, these are varying power levels and different characters that can bring different things to the story, but they're all a lot more approachable for a new reader. So if I were going to introduce somebody to the Marvel Universe, I would rather grab this, even though there's not as much, like, subtext and stuff to chew on here. Like, we really like Lunella because there's a whole thing about her and her identity and coming to grips with who she was and that she's going to grow up to be something that's different from what she is, but that doesn't necessarily mean bad. Like, there's all kinds of great morality in that's not in this, but this is such an easier comic to pick up and then burn through. It's so much more approachable.
Yeah, and I think it depends, like, why you're reading. As you said, like, if I had to give a comic to someone much younger, this is a good choice. Like, I feel like this would greatly entertain a kid and, you know, get them into the world of comics. So that is a definite positive. I guess it just kind of comes down to, like, why do I, Jen, read comics? And that's a confusing question in itself, but, yeah, it's kind of weird. Like, I don't know. I'm kind of at a loss for words on this one. Because it has me torn in two very different directions on, like, how much I enjoyed it and what I think about it. That said, I feel like this is one of the more just, like, joyous and creative Marvel comics that I've seen in a long time. This just, it cranks the dial up to 11 on fun. And I think that's actually really nice. As you said, like, you know, the stuff we read isn't necessarily grim dark, but like there is a trend definitely towards seriousness. And when things get goofy, it's more like in the Deadpool sense a lot of the time.
Mm-hmm.
This takes Deadpool humor and then just makes it really accessible for anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is like a pretty good thing to do. And I can tell that, like, Ryan North, like, I can see that he enjoyed working on this. You can see, like, there's just a lot of, I don't know, it's a happy comic. It's a really, really happy comic.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I, the only thing I'll say in terms of giving this to somebody who's new to comics, or even giving this to a younger person, that's positive about comics, I think there's this really big perception of comics as being men who look like Captain America and women who look like Power Girl. And that's not just body type, but like face too. Everybody has the same face. I really, really love how unique Doreen's face is and how unique, oh God, what is the roommate's name?
Nancy's
face. Nancy has a very strong facial feature set. And because different people look different, and not just in subtle ways like different hair color or different color eyes, but like fundamentally differently shaped faces. And this comic does that. And Erica Henderson, the artist, does a really, really good job of maintaining her style. And I don't want to say that the facial work is really good, because we talk about people like Kevin Maguire. And that's hella good facial work. But this is really strong. These people all look distinct and unique, and that's important. That really, really is for a younger reader to see comics as being this and not being what it was 20 years ago.
Well, what's great about the facial expressions too is, you know, it's clearly cartoony. Like, it reminds me of a Nickelodeon cartoon.
Yeah.
But the faces are expressive, and you can tell what they're feeling from their facial expressions. So if you're a kid who's not that great at reading, but you like looking at comics, you can kind of follow it, I think, and see based on the facial expressions, because, you know, everybody has their own distinct look, and, you know, they have their own distinct way of showing various emotions. And, you know, as you know, I think for kids, it, because of the similarity to like the type of cartoons they would usually watch, I think that it makes it easier for them to get into it, right? Yeah, it's another step into the world of comics.
You know, and thinking about different people, not just in different faces and facial expressions, like, I didn't realize until you were mentioning it, but like, Doreen has a very extroverted personality and a very extroverted set of reactions, whereas Nancy is super introverted and has very much more subdued facial reactions too. And it's nice that they find a common ground and become friends. And I like that even though Nancy is an introvert, like, what makes Doreen swoon is that Nancy's getting, you know, she's a hostage and she's like, well, somebody had to step up. So I did. Like, even though she's this introvert, she sees the need to step up and she does it. And I like that. I like that in this comic, whether you do it loudly or whether you do it quietly, what matters is that you do it. And that's a yes. really good message.
Boom. Mic drop.
Yeah. Good job on that point, Ryan North. Good job. Also, I'm scrolling through while we're talking about the art. The cover, the variant covers are great.
I love the like Street Fighter one.
Yes. Oh my God. Doreen, fantastic.
What issue is that? Number 4 with Doreen and Galactus. It's like perfect.
Yes. And there's a and set. Like, so go.
I was going to say, I like the one where I forget which issue it is, but Doreen's like surfing on Iron Man.
Oh yeah. Maybe that's that two.
Or maybe it's a variant.
3A.
Okay. Yeah. I just think that cover's hilarious.
Oh no, it's 2A. There's a set too of the first 5 issues where issue 1 says eats, issue 2 says nuts, issue 3 says kicks. And if you get all 5 of those variants, it says eat nuts, kick butts. And then the 5th one is just 3 exclamation marks.
Excellent.
That's X. Yeah, that's... I'm looking at them now. These are so cute. See, I love the art. I feel like they could not have possibly chosen a better artist, because I think Squirrel Girl, like, just suffers for having a hyper-realistic artist, because, I mean, really, a lady with squirrel teeth and a tail, it's a little nightmare fuel when you depict it really realistically.
Yeah, squirrels here, are also disgusting.
Really?
They're rats with fluffy tails. It's literally what they
are. That's cute. I love rats. So.
Okay. But I mean, like, as a rodent, like, okay, I know.
Like, the teeth, right? Like, the teeth are, they're so horrifying in, like, the old comic, for instance, that they stick at the end of the trade here.
Yeah. Yes, but, absolutely.
You know, it's adorable when you look at her in the main thing, because it looks like normal teeth, unless sometimes there's, like, a profile view or she opens her mouth, and then you realize, like, her teeth aren't huge. They're just squirrel-like, and that's not so creepy.
Yeah.
I don't know, like, there's little bits of the art, too. Like, she is throwing Craven up in the air and sitting there thinking about, like, what do I want to do with him? And the art style, like, shifts to these five panels, and it's, like, kind of like a Cartoon Network stylized.
Yeah.
Kind of thing going on, like Dexter's Laboratory or Fairly Odd Parents, like that kind of style. Like, it suddenly switches to pastels and these, like, more simplified lines. And just things like that are such nice touches, because, like, it's good characterization, too. You absolutely know that when Doreen imagines, like, scenes in her head, it's, like, Cartoon Network cartoons going on up in there, right? It's it fits really nicely. Also, I think Ryan North has me thinking in his, like, humor mindset, because the first thing I see when I see Kraven the Hunter is, like, you couldn't give him a hug because of that belt. And that's not something, like, I would normally think of. But I just look at him, I'm like, why is his belt so spiky? You could never hug him. But no one would, except maybe Doreen, right?
Yep.
So... I don't know. It's just little things like that. I think that the art is just spectacular for this.
Yeah. I will agree with all of that. I really appreciated Kraven showing up, because Kraven's like a joke a lot of the time. But I always think of Kraven from Kraven's Last Hunt with the Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
And in that, he's legit terrifying. He's horrible. So I, like, never see him as a joke. So it was nice to get to see him here as a joke. I have a Kraven action figure sitting in my cart on eBay, and I so want to buy it. But I just want to buy it because he has, like, the, like, yelling facial expression, like yelling, laughing. it's like, oh, that's.
I want you to buy it so I can see it now.
I want to buy it because it's the only head that he comes with, and I want to, like, I have, like, a little action figure, like, dinner table, and just set him at the dinner table with his, like, ah, ha, 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 face. Just doing everything with that face.
Please.
Okay.
Please.
All right, I'll buy it tonight.
Yes. Peer pressure.
You and I are terrible at peer pressuring each other.
I know. Like, you sent me that guy who was selling, like, tons of Star Wars figures, and I bought like 7 or 8 of them. You're bad influence.
I don't regret it.
Me neither.
It was a good sale.
Yeah, it was. I got a lot of cool stuff. I got like 5 clones and a General Grievous.
So if you were going to buy a Squirrel Girl action figure, would it be the one? See, like, you would have to have the bushy tail, but then, like, how she tucks it in when she goes in disguise.
I like how she's proud of the booty it gives her, too.
Yes.
It's just hilarious.
That comes up later in the one that I read, the Dr. Doom one, the one that I read by mistake. She brings it up in there, too.
Yeah. I read that first issue.
It was like in the footnote, it uses the word, Calipigian?
Calipigian? Yes.
Yes. Do you know that word, Jen?
Yeah, it's big booty in reference to a statue of Venus, I think.
Yeah. That was, Google defines it as having well-shaped buttocks.
Ah, nice. So this was actually my suspension of disbelief, because I was like, yeah, sure, but what happens when you sit down and all the fur gets, like, compressed, and now you have a deformed butt?
The superhero problems.
Yeah, she's gonna get, like, tail cowlicks, and then her butt's gonna get all lumpy.
I mean, it's gonna have to be a little lumpy anyway, right? Because, like, I'm imagining, Jen, you can't relate to this, but David, when you pack it in and, you know, and you pick a side in the morning, right? You have to pick a side. So, I imagine the same thing kind of happens for her with her tail. Like, she can't just go straight down the middle, right? She has to, like, kind of start her tail going off to the right, but then not put too much tail on the right buttock that she's, like, got a lopsided ass. So she's got to really balance her tail between her butt cheeks.
Yes.
We are intellectuals having an intellectual conversation.
Hey, we're going to break down the art this far. It's important. I don't know why, but I can think of a reason.
I started this. I fully admit that.
Well, I think it's really important to discuss the mechanics of tail hiding.
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, who else is going to?
But you know what, speaking of the mechanics of how things work, like, I'm interested because this comic kind of subtly at the very end of questions how the mechanics of Squirrel Girl's powers go about, because at the end, the squirrels are all still... Did you catch that after the letters to the editor at the end?
Yeah,
the
last
trade? There's two pages of Whiplash?
Yeah, they have Whiplash.
Like, yes. Still covered in... Yeah. So it's like, is she, like, asking them to do something and just talking to the squirrels? Or does she kind of have, like, some hypnotic power over them that they now cannot leave Whiplash?
Oh, that's dark.
Yeah, like, is it that's communicative, really, like, asking them to help, or is it like Aquaman, where Aquaman can talk to the fish but also mind control them, basically?
I think it's more communicative. Like, they just really like Doreen.
And maybe the squirrels feel such a sense of duty, and nobody's come to pick up Whiplash yet, so they're just holding him until somebody finally shows up.
Yeah, well, it's like the other ones that stay in the squirrel suit form, like, all day while she's in space.
Yeah, that's true. That was great.
Well, I feel like if it was just compulsion, Tippy Toe wouldn't argue with her all the time.
Yeah.
And Tippy Toe yells at her a lot in the first issue. So.
That's true. Oh, I do. Speaking of, like, the little thing at the end, I really appreciated that the beginning of issue 4 is one page of her taking something with Galactus, and then fake letters.
Yeah.
That was fantastic. Because people always laugh about that, right? Like, oh, what would really happen if Voyager were real? Oh, if we're entering Borg space, oh, the ship blows up, roll credits. Right? Like, there's always that joke. And it's like, there's a million memes. If you go to r/prequel memes, there's a bunch of those that just end in the frame of written and directed by George Lucas.
I love those. Right? Those are great.
And that's basically what they've done here. Is print that meme, print that troll. And it works really good. Mm-hmm. And it further establishes the idea that we have a super unreliable narrator here. I was like, what the fuck? And I was expecting, because you get that page, and I'm like, okay, this is a framing device. I'm sure the next page is going to be, oh, you know, 2 hours ago. And, you know, flashback or whatever. But then it wasn't. It was just letters. I was like, what? Really? I mean, I thought it was funny. If you guys didn't,
I thought it was funny.
Okay.
It was a good gag.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. Do we have anything else? Or do we want to rate this bad boy?
Yeah.
Let's rate it.
Okay, David, you go first.
Oh man, this is like kind of hard to rate. You know what? Fuck it. I'm just gonna give it a 4.5.
Damn.
Because I think the comic is really good at being the type of comic it wants to be. Do you know what I mean? It's like funny. It's very self-aware. And yeah, it really succeeds at being what it is supposed to be. You know, it's supposed to be funny and it's funny. It's supposed to be accessible, I think, to a wide audience, and it definitely is. It doesn't try to be anything other than it is, and what it is, it succeeds at. So, yeah, 4.5.
I'll go next. I'm going to give it a 3.5. There's a lot of stuff I liked about this, but like we were talking about before, like, I don't know what I took from this. Like, it's really good at, like you're saying, David, it's great at hitting its audience and doing what it wants to do, but I feel like if I want to rate it more than that, it should do something more. Like,
yeah, I suppose that's true.
Like, Moon Girl didn't hit the audience the way it was supposed to, but there were so many layers in that comic, even though it was written for a younger audience, and I think would appeal to a younger audience in a much more subtle way. There's layers and layers and layers in there. And you could put, I don't know, one layer in here. I feel like what you read is what you get. And you can boil down some stuff a little bit more, but what you read is what you get. And it's really well executed, and there's nothing wrong with, you know, a really good executed sitcom either. Like, you know, I love watching Cheers, but there ain't a whole lot of layers in Cheers, you know? And I feel like this is, it does what it does really well, but it only does that. So 3.5. Jen?
Okay. I'm going to preface this by saying, like, I really enjoyed talking about this. I thought it was good fodder for discussion.
No, this is going to be low.
And, like, for anyone who, like, enjoys Ryan North's work, because he's done a number of other comics and webcomics, and I think he helped co-author a play. Like, if you like Ryan North, this is for you. 4.5, like, you will love this. For me, I'm gonna be an asshole. It's a 1.5. I really, really did not enjoy reading it.
What about his writing style is what can you put a pin on it?
Yeah, well, here's the thing. Like, this is, I fully admit this is not constructive criticism. This is just me being a jerk, and I don't like to do that. I hate his writing because it feels really pretentious to me. I hate his sense of humor. He's one of those people who is making jokes and is like, look at this very stilted mode of, like, syntax that I use. He uses it in a lot of his stuff. Like, look how I put a twist on these characters. I am very smart, and smart people will understand my humor, and we will all laugh together. And no, I mean, that's mean of me to say, and that's probably not what he's thinking at all. But I just, it strikes me as incredibly pretentious and also Tumblr-esque, and I hate his writing. There, I said it.
All right.
That's okay. I think you feel about him how I feel about the guy who did Scott Pilgrim.
That's also how I feel about Scott Pilgrim. Remember Brian when Leo we read Mally? Seconds?
Yeah.
When
yeah.
we read Seconds, I was just mad that he wrote the thing. I was like, this is a 1. So, I mean, I have a track record of hating a very specific genre of writing.
Yeah.
And I think anyone who listens to my review should take that with a grain of salt and know that if they like this, it is a, like, if the writing's for them, it's an excellent comic. If the writing's not for them, then it's a pass. But yeah, for me, personally, 1.5.
Okay.
And the saving grace is the art. I love the art.
Yeah, no, and I totally understand what you're saying. Like, Ryan Lee O'Malley kind of bugs me. But for me, it was the Aftermath series of Star Wars books that came out right after or before episode 7. David's laughing because I texted him. I was like, I cannot fucking stand this writing style. The author, Chuck Wendigo, everything is short, punchy sentences and fractions. And it's like,
I read all 3 of the books.
Yeah, like, I'm interested in the content, but it was, like, I'm interested in some, like, of the characters, but God, the writing style.
You definitely had to power through it.
Yeah.
You know, it was just one of those.
Everything is quick, short sentences and fractions of sentences. And it's just like, come on, man, take a little bit more time. I'm not in that big of a hurry. I can read, you know, a complete sentence or 2 in a row.
You know what you should read? You should read Thrawn.
I should. I need to read Thrawn, and I need to read Ahsoka. I've had the Ahsoka book for a while. Actually, I want to read the Ahsoka book, but first I want to I want to listen to the audiobook because Ahsoka, the actress who does the voice acting, narrates it.
Oh, I think I can lend it to you through Audible.
Ooh, yes. Let's see if we can make that work tomorrow.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I did the same thing. I bought it, the book, and then I bought the audiobook because of Ashley Eckstein.
Well, I bought the book in print because I pre-ordered it, and then I realized that I never get a chance to read stuff in print because I'm in bed and I can't have the light on because our daughter's in there. So then I bought it for Kindle, but I'm in the middle of a Star Trek book on Kindle. I don't want to, like, I can't stop reading a book in the middle. I have to finish that book first before I go to the next one. So, but I can stop listening to podcasts and listen to the audiobook. So I'm going to have bought this book for the third time.
Well, let me try to see if I can lend it to you.
Yeah. I don't mind buying anything because Ahsoka is a fantastic character and one of my favorite things in the new Star Wars universe. And if I spend more money to support a character in that kind of development of the franchise, I'm down to do that. Yeah. So we had really ranging ratings on this comic. I don't think we've had this big of a range in a long time. It's really interesting. But I guess this is why we wanted to circle back to this. So next week we're going to continue our Turns Out It Was Good series with a comic by Matt Fraction. And we didn't include it because I feel like Matt Fraction has a different book on the best of every year. So it kind of feels unfair to just include him every year in the best of. But I picked up Odyssey because the covers drew me in. And this thing is fucking insane. So we're going to read Odyssey Off to Far Ithaca. And the best I can describe this is a psychedelic alternate future version of Odyssey where Zeus kills all the men. I don't know. It's so weird, but I cannot wait to read it with you guys and talk about it. Cause I read this and I can't give this to my wife. Cause she'll be like, what the fuck is this thing? She won't.
All right. I'm looking forward to it.
Like, I feel like approaching this requires sophisticated comic book readers like you two. So I want to read this.
Sophisticated.
Yes, you are.
Thank you.
So anyway, yeah, that's next week. Odyssey, Off to Far Ithaca. Go to welcometocomics.com. On the left, there's a button for future shows. We got up to, like, episode 300 on there. Past shows, you can listen to our past 288 episodes, which is baller and insane. There's a contact page, all that good stuff. And if you like the show, go to patreon.com/NO. If you like the show, go to patreon.com/welcometocomics and support the show. If you give us at least a penny a month, like become a patron of any amount, really anything, and you get access to a bonus episode every month. This episode we talked about Star Wars a bit and Silicon Valley Comic Con a bit. So check that one out. And then, and there's other perks and stuff there. Just go check it out. You'll go to the page. You don't have going to the page doesn't automatically make you a patron. Just go and look, poke around, and if you decide to, yeah, throw a penny, a quarter away a month, whatever. It's all appreciated, every little bit. So next week, Odyssey Off to Far Ithaca by Matt Fraction. Until then, everybody, goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.